The aim of this course is to obtain some fundamental instruction on the principles and practice of Catholic morality. As a result of this basic instruction, the student should be able to give an intelligent account of the Church's teaching on the moral order. Immediately we see that the purpose of this course is not only to acquire some understanding of Catholic morality, but also how to put this knowledge into apostolic practice. Thus, the present course ties in with its companion course on the re-evangelization of America. How? Because to re-Christianize America, two levels of evangelization are needed. First, to teach the truths of the Catholic faith that have been so widely neglected, misunderstood, and misrepresented. And then, to teach the principles of Catholic morality that are so drastically denied, and in their place, we see the most blatant pagan immorality, not only tolerated, but brazenly taught to young children in schools and legalized by the highest judiciary of our country. I came from Washington, D.C. last night, gave some lectures there. While there, one of my friends showed me what is being used in the first grade of grammar schools, public schools in the East. Page after page with pictures. For example, this is first grade. Large full page picture showing a man leaving his house. Mommy and daddy have divorced. Daddy is leaving home. Shows him packed and leaving. Next picture. Daddy now has a new friend. So, a man walking into a house. There's a man, a younger man, waiting for him. Third picture. Daddy and his friend now not only live together, they sleep together. First grade. Picture of two men in bed. And then one more. These are all full-page pictures in colors. And a young boy, evidently, by the man's marriage, embraced by his father and his homosexual partner. Love comes in different ways, but it is all the same. Four picture, first grade, elementary, public school in the East. What's our method? For procedure, we will follow a certain pattern. The textbook then is what you've been given the first pages of. introductory catechism of moral theology. And the class lectures following the sequence of the catechism, but expanding on its contents. Whenever I can, I will of course add, exemplify, illustrate what's in the catechism. Then periodic quizzes on the students' reading of the catechism, or short essay turned in. Now, for class, I believe we have class next week, am I correct?
Yes.
Next Sunday. What I would like to do, so you know what your homework is, I always choose only one of the two courses. It will be the second course, and you will be given the first chapter of the Second Vatican Council's decree on the apostolate of the laity. You'll be given a short quiz on that first chapter, which will be distributed at the beginning of our next class. Sometime each class, there will be written questions. I prefer written for obvious reasons. And make them as short as you can. Turn them in. Cover as many as we can. 20 or so minutes, he will allow for questions. If then you would follow me, I will not always take question after question, given the sheer amount of matter to be covered. I repeat, it is a moral obligation, if you're going to take this course, to, of course, attend class, but also to read the material. As you will notice, each of these questions with a short answer is followed by a commentary. I should say, the course you've been given, these notes, are what I gave the Daughters of St. Paul in Boston when I was teaching them . One of my hopes is, as a result of our classes this fall, to add to the commentary and then publish. This has not yet been published. May I ask you not to duplicate copies for circulation? Is that fair? It's just good Jesuit business, not to be in competition with later on, hopefully, a published short catechism. What is Catholic moral theology? It is a science of human actions, insofar as they proceed from reason and divine faith and lead to man's supernatural destiny. I cannot tell you how important it is to realize that moral theology is not mere ethics. Ethics is indeed the science of what we call moral conduct, but ethics derives only from the naked reason. The Greek philosopher Aristotle, 300 years before Christ, wrote an extensive commentary on what he called the Nicomachean Ethics. Aristotle, 300 years before Christ, spoke of the moral virtues, prudence, justice, 42 temperals. But mobile theology or mobility draws not only on reason, but also on revealed faith. And for us, that revealed faith is revealed in the New Testament. One of my favorite definitions of Protestantism is Old Testament Christianity. As my student, the Lutheran School of Theology, better put that down if they wanted to pass the course. So this is based on divine revelation is found in the Old and with emphasis New Testament. Moreover, not only as found in the New Testament, but as interpreted by the Catholic Church. Is that ever important today? Where I'm told the latest figure that I've got is 18 states. The latest one I understand is Connecticut, has just removed all sodomy laws from the books. Homosexuality is now legal with devastating consequences, as we already know, to our society. But notice, unlike ethics, morality, as we understand the term, has a purpose. The purpose is that we might use our free wills according to God's will so as to reach heaven. Second question, how does moral theology differ from moral philosophy or ethics? You already said something, but one more thing that needs to be added. The principles and norms are derived not only from reason, but from divine faith, assisted by God's grace. How important that is. When Colleen Mast was coming out with her first edition, Sex Education, I told her, Colleen, you don't talk about chastity without telling people they need grace. Divine grace even to know, to understand what God wants us to do in practicing chastity. And even more important, we need constant divine grace to practice chastity. Call it sex education, call it chastity education. Meaningless, worse than meaningless, unless the person has access to the grace to live up to the humanly impossible virtue of chastity to practice. There are two impossible Christian virtues to practice, and nobody told you, and they are chastity and charity. And the word is not difficult, not hard, not demanding. The word is impossible. And I'm not speaking metaphorically. Impossible. In other words, moral teaching through our purpose moral theology not only informs the mind of what are, say, the virtues that we are to practice to reach heaven, but tells us how we are to put them into practice. And that is why the just are not talking rational language. is dangerous to learn about morality. And the more you know, the more dangerous it becomes. Because then you find out what you should be doing. But you're helpless to do it. And that is why, as you know, those who don't have our faith, they think, speaking of chastity, which is such a major issue in our society, anyone who seriously tries to control or master their sexual desires is repressed. Did you know that? Is psychologically sick. Did you know that? Sometimes I start a lecture by addressing the audience. I'll save it for now. My dear fellow psychotics, hope I'm making sense. You must have the grace. Otherwise, if you try to conform to the world around you, of course you become psychotic. How does moral theology differ from dogmatic theology? Dogmatic theology is a science of what we are to believe. Moral theology is a science of how we are to behave. Now, dogma, or doctrine, is the foundation or the basis for how we are to behave. For example, all the moral teaching of the world would be worse than useless unless I knew that God became man and believed on faith. That God became man and practiced all the moral virtues that He wants us to practice. And that being God, He not only provided us with a model or the example of how we are to live, but also provides us constantly with the means we need. Another word for the means we need is grace. Grace is the means we need to live a morally good life. And then, even this early in the course, we have to say it. The three fundamental sources of this grace, without which moral theology becomes moral insanity, our prayer, the sacraments, and cooperation with the graces you receive. Unless you pray, you cannot. And the verb is, you cannot live a moral life. No way. No way. Everyone who does not pray is in the state of mortal sin. No way. And the more demanding our life, the more we've got to pray. A couple before they married, they pray, but not so much. And they marry. They tell me, Father, I never realized I'm going to live a happy married life. This is not easy. One wife calling me up. I'm not exaggerating. Long distance. I just witnessed their wedding. They were on their honeymoon. She called me up late at night. Prayer. Sacraments. This is just good business. You just need the sacraments to live a good moral life. I don't like to get up in the morning. Who does? And then cooperate with the graces you've got. Every grace we cooperate with, great merits, the grace we'll receive only if we cooperate with the grace we receive. God is constantly giving us graces. If we don't cooperate with the graces that He's giving us now, we will never, and this is a revealed adverb, we will never receive the graces God intended to give us had we cooperated with the previous graces received. We go on. Number 4. How does moral theology differ from ascetic theology? Just an answer. Moral theology deals principally with what is preceptive and obligatory in God's law. Whereas ascetic theology deals mainly with the counsels which God has not prescribed, but which He invites His followers to practice. Moral theology, therefore, deals with the duties of Christian believers. Ascetic theology is a science of Christian perfection. Well, just for the record, in case you think you can get off easy, we can distinguish mentally between moral and ascetical theology, but in practice, either we do more than we have to, or you won't be able to do even what you have to. Law of the spiritual life. How does moral theology differ from mystical theology? Moral theology is concerned with man's responsibility toward God rather than with God's reward. Mystical theology, on the other hand, is a science of the divine gifts, especially of contemplation and union with God, which He confers on chosen souls. Just for the record, with so many mystics, pardon me, making the rounds these days, I just received it. I couldn't believe it. Weighed about 20 pounds. 5 volumes, at least 2 inches thick, the revelations of a woman mystic on the West Coast. Well, now please read these books and inform her spiritual director what I thought of her thinking. I have not yet opened the books. Some semester we might have a course in mystical theology. It's a wonderful experience. And more than my share in dealing with mystics, both in the past and presently. You don't have to be a saint to be a mystic. Memorize that. You don't have to be a saint to be a mystic. And it is dangerous to rely on called the mystical phenomena or mystical revelations. Here's a person who may at least think they have mystical experiences. may not be all that holy. Listen to this. Most of the principal heretics of Christianity believe themselves to be mystics. Let me repeat. Most of the principal heretics of Christianity believe themselves to be mystics, including, if you please, Martin Luther. Mystical theology is a science. Mystical theology is a science all by itself. How does moral theology differ from canon law? Moral theology concerns itself exclusively with man's conduct interiorly. Its object is the internal behavior of human beings. Canon law is directly concerned with what is called the external forum, with human conduct insofar as it is external, sensibly perceptible, and affects the society in which the person lives. A person can be scrupulously observant of canon law and can be living a life of crime. That is not a casual statement. Canon law has to do with, I repeat, external behavior as directed by the church's legislation. We use the word as Catholics, canon law. And by the way, one sure sign of being an educated Catholic is you know how to spell the word canon. Don't look. How do you spell canon?
C-A-N-O-N.
Real loud.
C-A-N-O-N.
C-A-N-O-N. Right. How do you call the artillery? How do you spell that? C-A-N? N-O-N. It is not canon law and shooting. In fact, the church does not even strictly speaking call them laws, but rather canons. One reason, of course, is to constantly distinguish between what is civil legislation and what ecclesiastical prescription. We go on. How does moral theology differ from pastoral theology? Moral theology applies to all Catholic believers. Pastoral theology concerns itself with the care of souls, incumbent on those who have an established office in the church. And that applies especially to priests, bishops, and those who are in authority in the church, where they do not have what we call ordinary authority, but delegated authority. Strictly speaking, those who have ordinary authority are those who have been ordained. And that, just for the record, is a real target of the feminist movement and the strong drive for the ordination of women. I know enough of these women to know they couldn't care less about the priesthood. Come on, priesthood. What they want is power. In the last analysis in the Catholic Church, authority rests ultimately only on those who were ordained, beginning with the Vicar of Christ and the bishops of the Catholic Church. unlike in the States. No one is ordained to hold public office. Unlike, by the way, in the Old Testament. When in the Old Testament, we don't use the word ordained because there was no sacrament of orders in the Old Law. But we do speak in the Old Testament of priests, prophets, and kings being anointed. The power came from God. And the one person who held the highest authority that ever man has held or can hold on all three levels, and by whom everyone who was ordained, by whom then the authority to govern is conferred, is of course Jesus Christ. Pastor theology, therefore, the theology of those who hold authority in the church. And how this is needed, and to help especially our Catholic bishops to realize their pastoral responsibilities. You should read, some of you, I presume, do read the Divine Office. You have the Office of Readings. The Office of Readings for some weeks have been from St. Augustine, telling the bishops how they are to govern. The science of authority in the Catholic Church is pastoral theology. Number 8, what is distinctive about Catholic moral theology? It is distinctive because it recognizes the Church's hierarchical authority to identify and interpret the moral principles and norms of reason and revelation. And that's it. In other words, as Catholics we believe, it is not enough to just use our reason, not enough to have divine revelation, not enough to have the sacred scriptures. We believe there is on earth an authority that is a divine right to tell us what the obligations are, how they are to be lived, and who is obliged to practice these obligations. And that is, that's the reason why the Catholic Church is so virulently hated, especially by those who see, and they know what they're doing, who see in the Catholic Church their only real enemy on earth. The homosexuals. Those who believe in contraception. Catholic Church is an enemy of progress. And the reason is because we as Catholics believe the Church has divine authority to interpret the laws, not just their meaning, but how we are to put them into practice. Number 9, what are the main divisions of Catholic moral theology? There are 3. the principles derived from reason and revelation, the precepts given to us by God and the Church, and the means, especially sacraments, prayer, and penance. I thought you said that the third principal means of obtaining grace was cooperating with God's grace. Sure. Case nobody told you. It's a secret. To cooperate with God's grace, you've got to practice penance. I don't get it. Let me explain. Penance, as you know, means doing something or enduring something which you don't like. What is the most painful thing on earth? Beginning with the speaker, what's the most painful thing we have to do on earth?
Going against our wills.
Oh, what a quiz this would be.
Give up our will.
I wish I could ask each of you to put down in writing, what do you think is the most painful thing on earth? Well, the most painful thing on earth is to surrender our own self-will. She may like music, it drives him mad just to listen to. Yeah, the kind of thing she likes to listen to. Well, poor fellow, he's got no choice. If he's going to live in a happy marital union, he will have to surrender his will to the person. I'm sure you all know, between men and women, what would you say? Who has a stronger will, men or women? No man I've ever asked ever dealt it. Some men who have not married are not so sure. 2 weeks after marriage, they're absolutely certain. And this, by the way, in counseling women, we have such a strong will. But my husband is a brute. Well, maybe he is. But you've got to learn how to, pardon me, tame this wild animal. And this is the fruit of 40 years of priestly experience. So we still say there are three principal sources of grace: prayer of the sacraments and penance. Our penance is, oh Lord, I knew it, I knew it. Penance is the hardest penance is surrendering my own will. I'll mind you. It's not just surrendering my will to God. Oh, we're all so ready to surrender our will to God. It's when he puts this creature with a very human will, what faith it takes to believe. You mean she, Father, let me get you straight. Are you telling me that she is representing God's will to me? Yes, Jim, she does. That won't be easy. Of course it won't be easy. And the more we surrender our wills to the will of God, manifested in so many ways, especially the people that he puts into our lives, the more grace we get to cope with our own self-will for the future. Let me ask, what is the schedule? Remembers? Till what time do we go?
2:25.
Please?
2:25.
Number 10. What is a human act? Now we're getting into the vocabulary of moral theology. A human act is an action which proceeds from the free and deliberate will of a human being. What are we saying? As human beings, we perform many actions. Not all the actions that human beings perform are human actions. Well, what are they? We call them acts of man, technically. Strictly speaking, a human action is one on which the mind has first reflected and the will has made a choice. How we need in our brainwashed United States to realize that we're supposed to perform human actions. I honestly believe that most Americans, most of the time, are not performing human actions. I mean it. They're going through all kinds of motions. Not too many people think or act for themselves. In other words, they do so much reading. I've watched, and it pains me, especially when I watch priests for hours. Hypnotized by the television screen. And that, by the way, is real hypnosis. Part of my background is studying and writing on the science of hypnosis. Television is hypnotic. The radio is hypnotic. Reading. I just thought I would illustrate what I'm talking about. I mark my language. America is a country of hypnotized people. Living in a dream world of unreality. When we do the Xeroxing, it's a library of fiction books. I'm guessing 1,500. I just thought I'd pick five. Here's one by James Michener, a novel on Poland. A novel. You follow the logic? You could put anything into a novel. And this, by the way, was a thick book. And people will read this and will believe it more than they will believe the Bible. Pain. Whatever. Nabokov, a novel by the author of Lolita. the exorcist, William Peter Blatty, a novel done, by the way, where I stayed overnight on Friday at Georgetown University. There's a real devil, and there are exorcisms. This is a novel.